Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. This is Doug. I'm here in studio with Amy, and we are going to be talking a little bit about the riots in Missouri this last week. You know, St. Louis kind of was a tinderbox, and it went up in flames. I saw some fantastic video off of YouTube of a QT being burned and the people in the streets and the looting that was going on. There were armed citizens in the streets defending their businesses, police out in riot gear, multiple nights of looting. The police had to use tear gas to disperse crowds. And, you know, this is something that we haven't seen in America in the last 5-10 years, really. I mean, there were some, I remember the Rodney King riots in L.A. I remember, in fact, that's about the last big one that I do remember. That sticks out of my mind. But we look back, there were race riots in the 60s. There were a lot of things that were going on that caused people to decide to take to the streets and take to violence. And this is a really important topic. It's very timely right now because of what's going on in St. Louis and Ferguson. It's very timely because the entire country is coming to a point where we're looking at horrible things happening, and are we sustainable? We look at, you know, the statistics coming out of different states like Alabama, where 2 out of every 3 people are dependent on the government for their day-to-day subsistence. And we say, is this sustainable? Is this something that we can keep moving with? And lo and behold, I don't think so. And at some point, the money runs out, and the credit runs out, and the credit cards are turned off. And what are people going to do? So we look at what do people do when there's a stressor involved, and we see the urban areas erupting into violence.
Yeah, and we see, when I think of riots, I think of, you know, watching TV and seeing something that happens over in another country.
Yes.
You know, I don't really think of it happening here so much. And
that's a danger that we fall into all the time, thinking that this is something that only happens
to other people. Right. Yeah, I think that's kind of our human nature, though. I mean, we think of that, you know, when it comes to different diseases or different, you know, any kind of emergencies or disasters or, you know, it's, family problems.
It's a great self-defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. You can just, like, bury your head and say, oh, that only happens.
Yeah, we almost kind of have to, because, I mean, if we sit here and worry to death about everything every single day, I mean, then we're, you know, that's no good.
Exactly. And that's a big part of all of this, is how do you control your anxiety and fears about what's going on in the world around you? How do you deal with it? How do you cope with everything? And a lot of people just turn ostrich and say, oh, well, it will never happen to me. And then you have some people who go overboard the other way and say, everything's going to happen to me. I've got to go mortgage my house and get, you know, $50,000 worth of canned food, because otherwise I'm not going to make it. And how are we going to survive? And they end up stressing themselves to death just as much as the person who's completely unprepared when the disaster comes.
Yeah, right. So that's true. You know, I was kind of thinking, too, I guess the recent riots that I remember seeing is over the World Cup. And I know you're not a big soccer fan, Doug.
Yeah.
But just kind of seeing, you know, down in Brazil. I can't remember where the riots were, but it seems like was it in Brazil they were rioting?
I honestly didn't even hear about that one. But, you know, that
it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't a whole lot going on. There, you know, it was enough to make the news.
It was a boredom riot. Yeah. There we go. Mm-hmm. You know, that is another scary thought, because people riot when they're upset, and they riot when they're happy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Every day is a riot, right?
It is. Go watch some European soccer. You know, you just go for the riots.
Football hooligans. There we go.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, in Missouri, it's a lot more serious than the football hooliganism. You know, the thing that most stood out in my mind was that the images of the Quick Trip burning. And this last week, when it was happening, I put up a link on Ready Radio's Facebook page going to that QT burning after it had been looted. And there was a sign that they hung on the gasoline price list that said, snitches get stitches. Mm. And then you've got the police in full riot gear trying to hold back the crowds. There was one video that I watched. I don't know where it was exactly, but it showed cars trying to get through the road, and the road was completely blocked by people who had been rioting and looting, and they weren't letting the cars through. They're jumping up on the cars and jumping up and down on the hoods as the cars are trying to eke through this mob. I mean, there was probably 300-400 people in the scene that you could see on camera completely blocking this two-lane road and keeping the cars from passing through and backing up, and the horns were blowing and the people were trapped in their vehicles, and it would only take an instant for suddenly windows to be smashed and people to be drug out and starting to get beaten. And here we are, we're talking about an emergency, right? Whether it's a tornado or a hurricane or an economic collapse or an EMP, but I see this happening. I can see these people standing in the streets who no longer have food and don't have access to any way to procure it. You know, the ATMs are shut down and they don't have any food in their house because they didn't store anything up, and they don't have any money to buy food, and the stores aren't open even if they wanted to buy food because everybody is in a panic. And what do? Well, they turn their anger out on somebody who has what they don't. And here's somebody with a working vehicle, and they're going to, it wasn't even that they would be wanting to steal the vehicle. It's just that they want to take it out on the person who has what they don't have. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrifying prospect, especially as a prepper.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I almost kind of think of The Walking Dead, almost, you know, just kind of some of the scenes.
And you look at not only, you know, like the mindless drove coming at you, but the scene that comes to my mind was out of the remake of War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yes.
You know, he was driving in his little minivan, and that there's, again, that crush. There are all people trying to get in, and then they were pulled out. The little girl was pulled out of the vehicle. And what do? I mean, you can't keep going when one of your family members gets pulled out of the vehicle. You've got to stop and get him back. And he's there with the one gun. And, you know, the million people that are there, there's one revolver and he's got it. And you're left with this, you know, horrible choice. I can't take everybody, but I can take you. But if I take you, then everyone's going to take me. And there was a Mexican standoff for just a minute, but he couldn't hold it and he couldn't get his daughter back. And then the car started moving and they all went for the car. And then he was lost and he was just one of the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, and that's one of the things too that I kind of, my mind races as far as thinking, you know, how to avoid, you know, getting myself in a riot or being in an area that. But I mean, a lot of this is I don't have my crystal ball. You know, I told you a couple episodes ago I ordered it on Amazon. It still hasn't come. So you just don't know when you're facing something like this.
Must still be on order at True Prep too, I guess.
I don't know. It must be. I think they've got some coming in. We'll have to double check some of their newer items, I suppose. But
I was over there last week and I saw that they have a new display when you come in the door of their featured products for this month or week or whatever it was, but they've got their Mountain House piled up there with 25% off signs, so good way to stock up. But you know, it kind of begs the question. Yeah, you know, you can stockpile so much stuff, you can put up enough for years and years, but if you've got that much stuff, you can't move it, and if there's a riot coming towards you, you're going to have to abandon large portions of it, at least, if not all of it, in order to flee in front of the coming mob. Because when you've got, you know, 100 or 1,000 people coming, there's no way to hold them back. You just have to get out of their way, right?
I would imagine.
I mean, I can't think of a way to, I mean, short of a prison, and who wants to live in a prison? Short of a prison, I don't see any way to fortify a stronghold indefinitely. I mean, eventually you're going to wear down. You've got to sleep. You can't have enough people to hold a fort or a castle for siege for months and months and months. So, you know, as long as we're dealing with individuals or family groups or things like that trying to make it after a disaster, if a riot is coming, you got to get out of the way.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I guess there's so many people who are concerned about who knows what the future holds. And I know a lot of people are very interested in sort of, you know, branching out and moving north or going into the North Georgia Mountains or, you know, into Tennessee or, you know, some areas where it's not, you know,
so populated.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, like, when you see the riots break out now, it's always in densely populated areas. The other thing that boggles my mind is that there's a catalyst that gets people moving, and the catalyst is usually some kind of grave injustice. In this instance, you know, in Missouri this last week, the allegations were that a young minority male was surrendering and got shot in the back by a white police officer, and that was the catalyst that got people moving. But instead of rioting or protesting towards the police officers, they were smashing windows and taking cell phones and TVs. And there's this, like, huge disjunction between the catalyst that gets the ball rolling and the final product of the wanton violence and theft.
Right, exactly. I don't think that's how Martin Luther King would have wanted it.
I don't think that's how anybody would have wanted it.
No, of course
it.
Not.
Gandhi
of course
and,
not.
And yeah. all of the mm-hmm. great civil rights leaders of, yeah. of our generations and previous generations, you know, focused on nonviolence of, you know, passive resistance to what was going on and to bring attention and to educate and to, you know, and I think there's a point where you have to get up on your soapbox with a bullhorn and scream, no more, we won't do this. We stand up and we're going to say no to this kind of conduct. And I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that there's a point where you get to get a free TV over it.
Oh, no, no.
And that's the disjunction. That's how this spirals off into a crazy new direction is that people who partake in this kind of violence, they're not really protesting what they're protesting. They're there for themselves, and they're taking advantage of an opportunity. And I think that if we had a truly major disaster, something that was nationwide in effect, that you would see people become very opportunists. And this is, unfortunately, becoming part of the American psyche, to be opportunist and to take advantage of a situation. You know, not look at it for what it really was, not look at it for what needs to be done or how to work together as a group, but to just exploit whatever you can and take whatever advantage comes your way. Folks, we're coming up on a commercial break. Stay tuned. We're going to talk a little bit more about, like, group psychology in a riot when we come back. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about how people in a desperate situation will do desperate things. And that's something that's kind of axonomical, that we all understand that that's the way people work. But it's not something that we really confront on a daily basis and think about.
No, we don't. I mean, think about our normal average day. We are so... things have not really changed much in a long time, and yeah. we are spoiled, rotten Americans. I hate to say it, but you know, we all hop in our car. We drop the kids off at school. We go to work. We pick them up, or they go to daycare. We come home. We make dinner. You know, we watch a sitcom. We brush our teeth. We go to bed, and we do it all over again.
Yeah,
and it's routine.
And everything is awesome when you're part
sure.
of the team. So, you know, yeah, I'm making a joke there, but you're right. I mean, we have normalcy. We have a day-to-day routine. We do our thing.
We do.
And
exactly.
then, you know, something happens that throws that out of whack. But that routine that you kind of listed for upper middle class, you know, stable America is not exactly the same routine that you get from the lower economic strata.
And good point.
I've worked as a criminal defense attorney for a decade. And I've been a prosecutor as well. And when I look back at my career, the day-to-day, I was talking to a police detective friend of mine, the day-to-day of your average hoodlum does not reflect what you just described as a day-to-day for an average American.
Right.
You know, you get up at 11 or 12, you're kind of hungover or strung out from the night before, you try to find something, hopefully you find a warm beer laying around on the floor that you can finish off, you slap your girlfriend around a little bit, and you head out to see if mama has some food made for you, and if you're lucky, you get to eat lunch there, and then you head out to onto the street to find your friends, and you hang out on a corner with them for a while, and next thing you know, you're selling some drugs, and it's midnight, and you're pretty strung out again from the day's activity, and you collapse somewhere, hopefully where it's not too dangerous, and you wake up the next day at 11 a.m. And that kind of a you know, horrible, despicable, degenerate lifestyle is out there for a lot of people. A lot of people that we don't interact with on a daily basis live lives like that across all types of ethnicities, across all regions of the country, and all sorts of different places. It's this kind of who cares attitude about life, and self-medicating, getting high, getting drunk, getting away from their problems, no ambition, no, you know, getting enough money together so that they can buy some drugs or buy some beer or buy, you know, some fast food somewhere or you know, buy a hooker. It doesn't matter, but that's what their lives are. And people who live like that, they have no hope for the future. They have no building blocks. They don't create anything. They just kind of float through life.
Right, and that's a good point, too. You mentioned that they don't have any hope. I mean, hope is very powerful. It really is. And when you don't have hope, when you don't have a goal, if you don't have anything on your horizon that you can look for and see a way out, because I mean, what can you hope for? You know, getting a minimum wage paid job, you know, at a fast food restaurant. I mean, that's you get more money, you know, from the government. Than you know, going on and working for minimum wage.
Well, and the minimum wage has been so devalued through our inflationary policies that it's astounding. I mean, if you adjusted for inflation, the wage you got in 1963 to now, you'd make $21 an hour at minimum wage. Mm-hmm. If you adjusted it for inflation, a engineer in 1963, his actual earnings was around the same as our minimum wage now.
Wow.
Because we've lost 90% of our buying power in 50 years. 90%. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, you can't make it on the minimum
wage. And it sneaks up on you. It's almost like day by day, you know, when you kind of go through, you don't really... it's sort of like when you watch a child grow, you know, it's surprising. I mean, if you have visited a relative, you know, child and in a year, you're just astounded by how much that child.
They are.
I know, you're like, oh my goodness, but that mother doesn't see it every single day,
right,
how much that child is growing. And it's kind of the same thing with what's happening with our economy.
It's
really,
it's like boiling a frog. If you take a frog and you have a pot of boiling water and you throw the frog in, it jumps out.
Okay, yeah.
But if you put it in a bucket of cold water and you just turn the heat up slowly until it boils, it'll cook itself to death.
That's disturbing.
It is.
Yeah.
Because they don't realize the subtle changes until it's too late. Mm. And that's exactly, America is a frog in a pot of water that the temperature keeps getting hotter and hotter in.
Yeah, and that's very disturbing. For us and the frog.
So we go back to our despicable, deplorable human being that I exemplified a few moments ago, whose life has no hope, who has no values, who has no reason to keep going. And then all of a sudden, you see a whole bunch of people in the street, mad and yelling about something. Now, in your daily life, this is rather interesting. This doesn't happen every day, and it's a chance to go do something, because you're not going to go hang out at the mall. You're not going to go to work. You're not doing anything valuable. The highlight of your day is trying to mooch food off of mom or maybe your girlfriend if you're lucky.
Right.
And so here's a whole bunch of people doing something. So you go out into the street to join them. Next thing you know, because everybody's mad and throwing things and things start getting broke, well, shoot, you have an opportunity to have a brand new TV. Now,
well,
would you,
and it's a way to vent also. I mean, all those frustrations.
Would you ever have a new TV on the path you're on?
Probably not.
So here's your chance, and you are part of a mob where it's very unlikely that you're going to be singled out and identified.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who have a criminal tendency, and people like I described are committing crimes left and right, but they have a criminal tendency, but their fear is the fear of being caught and prosecuted. Now, the ones who commit the crimes anyway believe they will not get caught. I can speak with authority after doing criminal defense for years and years and years that there isn't a single person in jail who would say, you know what, I really thought I was going to get caught.
Sure, of course.
They all say, I thought I was going to get away with it.
Right.
And then they didn't, because you don't catch the smart and fast ones. But... That's just the way of it. Now you've got a rioting situation, and it turns into a looting because you've got anonymity. And this plays into how we as preppers need to realize the social dynamic that goes on in a riot. Is we have to, the first problem is anonymity. If the rioters feel that there's not going to be consequences because you can't identify them, they're much braver.
Right. You know, and it kind of brings to mind that... there was a show, it didn't last long, and it was one of your favorites.
Jericho.
There it is. And I watched on Netflix. I watched part of that, but it reminds me of one of, and our listeners, you can go to Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an interesting, and it was like one or two seasons?
It
I
was
think?
A season and a half.
Okay, season
it
and a half.
It died after the first season. It got canceled. There was a write-in campaign where everybody sent peanuts to CBS and demanded it come back.
Yeah.
And CBS came and completely changed the entire... almost all of the cast was gone. The premise was changed, and it became a very kind of like pro-government show, whereas before it was very seditious almost. and it lost all of its watching base and it died in like six episodes.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. Well, in one of those episodes, there was one of the characters was a lady who owned, it was like a little small grocery store. Mm-hmm. So this is set out, where was it set? It was like one
Kansas.
Was it Kansas? Okay, yeah. It was just a sort of a small community and sort of a, you know, little old town, but she had a little, it was a little grocery store. And I remember just kind of when everything went out, it was like the electricity went out and nothing was working, and there was no cash.
And
her
bag boy went and got a generator and hooked it up to the freezer.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, initially, things were fine and just normal, and people were still on their best manners. But as the season goes through, you start seeing where people are coming in. They're just going to take what they want because mm-hmm. Hey, we've got to survive. Mm-hmm. And it seems like once one person starts that, people will follow because one person just has to be bold enough to take that initial step.
It just takes a Judas goat to get everybody to follow behind.
Yeah, it does.
Do you understand the reference of a Judas goat?
A Judas goat?
Yeah, with goats and
sheep. I know a scapegoat, but...
Well, with goats and sheep, in order to get them to go into the slaughterhouse, they would have one that was trained to go up the ramp and walk in, and then all the rest would follow it.
Uh-huh.
And that one they would pull out and spare and put it back in the yard to lead the next group in.
Oh, wow. Huh.
And that's exactly sneaky, sneaky. What happens with human nature, too. Mm-hmm. When one person leads, everyone else follows. Mm-hmm. And there, when you see one person start to steal, then it becomes anonymity mm-hmm. and, well, I can do it, too.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, if you have one person walking through the grocery store going, you know what, I'm going to starve to death, so I'm just going to take this. If you're by yourself and everybody's looking at you going, shame on you, it's a whole lot different than if you have a whole bunch of people and everybody's doing the exact same thing and walking out the front door with groceries. I mean, you have a different feeling. Yeah. About doing that.
And so we've got this kind of underlying psychology of the rioters, but we have to kind of come up with an idea of how to deal with that. And one of the best ways to do it is to separate yourself out physically, as you were talking before,
right.
from a mass population center, because then you're going to have a different type of person. I mean, people who live in rural areas, now there are absolute criminals in every geographic location.
Oh, without a doubt.
But typically, people who live in rural areas are more self-sufficient. They tend to work either on their land or doing something in their area, in their community, and there's a little bit more community pride. And so I think that is a good way to create a buffer zone between yourself and a riot. You don't see a lot of riots in rural farmland.
Yes, well, exactly. But there has to be an answer for the people who, live in Atlanta and don't want to move.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there are steps that you can take to help secure yourself and your person and property. And we'll discuss in our third segment today a little bit more about how to be secure in your home, no matter where you are. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. When we took our break, we were talking about, kind of the psychology of rioters and rioting and looting mentality. We wanted to talk a little bit more about how to harden your home or your apartment in such a way that you become less of a target. And the first step to not being a looting target, I think, is to not display prominently items that would make you susceptible to looting or things that people want to take. The nicer the neighborhood is, hopefully the further away from a city center it is, but the nicer the neighborhood it is, the more likely it is to have valuable objects and items in it, and that attracts attention. So then if you are, if you're in the nicest house in the nicest neighborhood, you're a much higher target than the house that's not as prominently displayed or isn't, if you have your, like at Christmas time, they mm-hmm. talk about when you get your big screen TV, cut up
oh,
the box
right. yes.
so
mm-hmm.
that people don't know you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
arrange the TV in your house in such a way that it can't be seen out of a main window.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like that, help keep you from being quite such a target, not just from looters, but just from burglars.
Yeah, there are some really good security points, and it's really pretty neat. I mean, if you go and just Google search, how can I better secure my home, there's some really great tips out there. And I know... anything just as small as taking like a PVC pipe, just little white pipe that you can put in the base of a sliding glass door, and you can't push it open.
Mm-hmm. I used a wooden dowel rod, but that's exactly the idea.
Yeah, I mean, just even little things like that. There's some really cool ways that you can hide stuff in your house, too, which is pretty neat. Mm-hmm. I've seen an electrical outlet that's actually... It's not actually hooked up to electricity, and the front plate you can kind of pull down, and you can put valuables or cash or mm-hmm. a little cash stash or something like that in there.
Any way to hide something in plain mm-hmm. view is mm-hmm. useful, but that's always assuming that somebody that's like the second line of defense.
Right,
someone
right.
is already
yep.
in, and mm-hmm. You got to realize that no matter what you do, you cannot make your house entry proof.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is determined enough and has enough time, they will get in. And then you can start to do these secondary measures of making mm-hmm. sure that when they're in, the things that they're trying to find are so hard to come by that it's not worth their time. Because in a normal situation, you only may have a couple of minutes from breaking in before attention is drawn to you and you want to get out. Most burglaries happen in under 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So the more difficult and the more time-consuming it is to find different things that they're looking for, the less likely they're going to invest that effort to actually get there.
Right.
But a looting or a riot is a little different situation. They're not as preoccupied with the amount of time spent as they are with trying to grab as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with a food riot, I mean, how are you going to hide, 40 number 10 cans?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to hide, a couple of cases of corned beef hash
right.
or green beans? That's not stuff that you can really secure in that way. One of the things that I'd always been told is that you break it up and you have one area of food that is well hidden mm-hmm. and then you have something that looks, apparently this is all we have, so
mm-hmm.
that if someone does break in to take food, they take the, maybe you put the wise food up front.
Right,
so they run
right.
off with that, and then you put the good stuff, underneath the house.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there was actually American Blackout. Did you ever see that?
I
think I've mentioned it to you before. You have got to see this. I'm telling you. American Blackout, you can find it on YouTube. And that's exactly what one of the families did, is they had a little bug out location. And it was, just a little place out the woods somewhere, a little home that they had. Well, they had staged an area in the kitchen that actually had some food in it. And they had, the big majority of what they had was stashed, I believe it was underground, mm-hmm. like a sort of like a little bunker kind of a thing.
And did someone break in and
yes.
steal their stash?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm.
Now, another way to do that, if you want to think outside the box, is you could... When you leave, you could leave the door ajar and leave all the cabinet doors open and have like just two cans of green beans tipped over on their side and one laying in the middle of the floor and all the shelves empty, and they keep all the food under the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that way people would think that it had already been looted.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you go ahead and loot yourself.
Loot yourself.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go, folks. Now there is the idea of the week. We should start having an idea of the week.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Loot yourself to prevent from being looted.
Right.
This is like camouflage, looting camouflage.
Well, let me tell you, I love the that you brought up camouflage, because there is some great urban camo, things that you can do, and that's actually what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have a little get-home bag. It's not like the great big huge massive, bug-out backpack.
Let's be honest.
Yes.
That is a great big huge homeless person's bag that you have.
What? You saw my urban camo bag?
Yes, I
have. Oh, my gosh. It's nice. It's like a big blingy purse. Are you kidding me? It's got some bling. It's got a little bit of gold.
You can fit like 9 crazy cats in it too. You'll just be chucking them at people.
It's not that big. But yeah, but I mean, it's like, if I'm walking down the street with that, it's not like my great big huge, like camo military camo pack.
It doesn't have like an ACS Molly pack on your back.
Exactly.
Heading through the countryside. In fact, I think if someone saw you toting that bag around, they'd probably cross the other side of the street just on principle. So
maybe
it's not only camouflage, but it's also defense.
Right, there you go. Ta-da! Wow. Well, there's some other cool ways that you can hide, different food and things like that. There's some really great under the bed, sort of like the platform beds. If you've seen those are a great place to put food.
IKEA has one where the bed actually lifts up
mm-hmm.
so that you can put everything in
yeah.
it. And I had looked at that and thought that was a fantastic idea for like
yeah.
a kid's room, to be able to put stuff that there were winter clothes, put it right under the bed
exactly.
and it lifts up
yeah.
easy and goes down.
Right.
Not quite so easy when you've got like a king-size mattress, but for the kids' beds, it
mm-hmm.
was a fantastic idea.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a, you know, that's one place that you could hide stuff. Do you have any other areas that you?
Well, you know, my thought is that I've always liked caches, and I think that having an outdoor container that's waterproof and airtight that you can bury is a great way to deal with some of the long-term storage foods, because it's buried, you don't have to worry about temperature, and in your house it's going to get up to 90 or 100 degrees in the summertime. Trust me, I've seen that.
Yeah.
And then that degrades your food storage.
But if it's you do want to worry about the humidity, though, so like desiccant. And things like that, though.
Well, what I was thinking is just having a waterproof container that I could put my number 10 cans in, so the food's stored. And with if you do it on a nice, dry, cool day where you got it sealed up, then you won't have as much humidity concerns. You just have to worry about rust. Mm. So if you had a plastic container that was airtight, truly airtight, then you could bury that, say, 6 feet down in the backyard, and it would be temperature controlled.
Yeah, so there you go. That's
a
good idea.
It gives you some, and it's a lot harder to find, and it also will take you a little while to, if you even if you knew exactly where it was, if it's buried 6 feet down and sawed over, it's going to take you a little time to get to it, which is going to detract anybody from making that effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You know, I actually have in my basement, I have a basement that's half underground and half, you know, that's open on the backside, and down there I have this, it's like a door wedge that goes underneath the handle. It's sort of like a big metal pipe, I guess, sort of similar to that, and it has sort of like a little fork, sort of like a little rubber fork that goes underneath the handle, and then it has a rubber foot that's on the ground. And the cool thing is that if the door were unlocked, you cannot push it, or you can't push it open. You just can't do it. They've had things on like videos I've seen. What are the things they call that the cops use? That the battering rams?
Yes.
Was that it? So they've shown something on YouTube. It's like these battering rams could not open that door, which was pretty interesting.
I've always liked the old-fashioned way of putting a solid beam across the inside of the door with the hooks, where you can actually put a piece of wood all the way from jamb to jamb, so it would have to pull either the hooks out of the frame, or it would have to crack through a 2x4 across the door.
Oh, okay.
It looks a little medieval, and it only works if you're inside the home.
Right. But right. Same with this. Yeah. This
but piece. It's. I mean, it's cheap, and there it's very effective. And where the battering ram would hit is right on the other side of the piece of wood. Mm-hmm. So the wood distributes all of that force not only across the entire door, but through the frame and into the surrounding wall.
Right. And these kind of things are great to look into, because you can't always rely on a security system, because if the electricity were to go out,
well, the security system's just going to monitor and call the police at
right
best.
And if they're busy,
and why would they be busy during a riot?
Who
really
knows?
You know, they're all standing out there with those big plastic buffet things that they're trying to get the food and helmets.
Yeah, sure, there you go. Yeah, so yeah, I would definitely go above and beyond just a typical what I call it,
a door brace is a great idea. This is something that a lot of people are uncomfortable with, and you know, we're broadcast here in Atlanta, down in the heart of Dixie, and so firearms ownership is very prominent here, and we know that True Prep is shares space with Kudzu Tactical, which is another firearms retailer, and that they have a lot of firearms that are available. But I cannot stress the importance of self-defense without talking about having a firearm of your own to protect yourself and your family with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the old saying is that God made man, but Sam Colt made him equal.
Nice.
And
yep.
that's very true. And this was driven home to me one day when I was over at the True Prep Roswell store, and I was playing with one of their tomahawks. Mm. They had a book that was like the essential fighting tomahawk or something like that. I was like, well, let's take a look at this thing. So I started playing with the tomahawk, and about an hour later, after messing with the thing and reading in the book and messing with the thing, it became apparent with me that if I devoted about 10 years of my life to the practice of this, I could become a whirling dervish with a tomahawk and be struck down dead by the first little old lady with a 38 special that
yes,
I came across.
That's very true.
And that's the reality of it, is that you don't have to be the biggest, strongest, and fastest to be able to win. You just have to be able to access a firearm and use it effectively.
Yeah.
And this is a way that you can arm and defend your entire family, no matter how small of stature they are or how weak they are. They can defend themselves properly with a firearm against greater numbers of people. And so this is something that really needs to be considered. Folks, we're coming up on a commercial break. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking about riots this week and things that you can do to be better prepared. Amy has some great ideas on how to have more of your valuables secured and stored. I brought up the idea of caching food in the backyard to keep it safe. And on the heels of this, I think that we should bring up the True Prep product of the week.
Yes.
Which is...
Let's do it.
Exotac. Yes. Exotac is a really unique product because they are a company right here in Georgia that was founded with the idea of having fire starters and fire implements that were long-term durable, something that could really stand up to a riot.
Exactly. Yeah. These actually are pretty cool. Have you ever played with one of these?
I have.
Yeah. They're little fire starters.
Yeah. They're like mm-hmm. they're just like a magnesium rod that you would strike with a piece of flint.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you need a fire... There you go. And it works, if it's wet outside or,
Because it uses, their rods are made out of ferrocerium, which burns so much hotter. They actually burn so hot that if you use the edge of your knife to strike this bar, that it would cause the knife edge to weld.
Really? Now, see, I didn't know that.
Extremely hot. That's why they come equipped with a tungsten carbide striking element that can withstand the heat. And even then, the one that they have at the True Prep store that I was playing with, their demo model, even that, the tungsten carbide filament that you use to strike it is starting to get signs of heat damage.
Yeah. Wow.
So they are that hot.
Yeah. Well, I know that True Prep has a brand new display. They've got a whole bunch of items out right there in the middle of the floor, and it's
you can't possibly miss it.
You can't miss it.
In the middle.
Yeah, you can't miss it. And it's got the big old orange flame shooting right out of the top of it. Right.
I haven't seen this. Is it an actual flame? Is it like the Atlanta Olympics flame?
No, it looks kind of like a cartoon, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be cool.
It's an eye catcher. We'll say that.
Exotac should come out with a propane display that actually has a live flame on the top of their display.
Yes.
Because the flames that they create from their products are dramatic and substantial, and I think that would be a real eye catcher.
And I'm sure the owners of the store wouldn't mind at all
It would definitely help in the wintertime. I don't know about the summer cooling bills, but and just think, you could have the kids roasting marshmallows.
You could, yes. Or no liability there whatsoever,
or
right?
Or maybe give them some sticks of astronaut ice cream to turn over the open flame. Can you roast astronaut ice cream?
I think you can. I think you can probably roast anything. I don't know what the end result would be like, but
well,
I would say yes.
It's got a high
try.
Sugar content. Maybe it would caramelize.
It may.
I've got.
Doug just had a eureka moment.
We could get a skillet and saute some astronaut ice cream to see if it would caramelize in the butter.
I think we should.
Yes. Let's just make sure it's a Teflon skillet because I can see some definite melting in issues.
Mm, yeah. You know, my son did that when he was little bitty. Just a quick little bunny trail. When he was, it wasn't the astronaut ice cream, but it was actually Jell-O. He wanted to make Jell-O.
Uh-huh.
And so he took a cookie sheet.
Uh-huh.
He put it over our gas burner stove and dumped the Jell-O out onto the cookie sheet, turned it on. And it started turning into like a black bubbling, contraption mess. Yeah, it was quite interesting. Yeah, I think he was three.
When I was nine, my mom made fudge, and it was grainy. She didn't do it quite right, and it was very grainy. Mm-hmm. So I had this bright idea. Well, if it's grainy, all you have to do is heat it, because it would cause the graininess to break down.
Mm.
And what better way to heat something through to the middle quickly than a... Microwave.
Okay.
Exactly.
There we go. Yep.
So I took a hunk of the fudge and put it in a plastic cup and put it in the microwave for 2 minutes.
Oh, my.
Did you know that the fudge got hot enough to melt the plastic cup and make it a pool inside the microwave?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And the toxic smoke was pouring off of the plastic and filling the house. It was really awesome. Mm. So my mom had worked nights and she was resting, and so I'm busy trying to air out the house on that end of the house and clean and peel the melted plastic melted fudge off of the base of the microwave, and she never realized what I did.
Oh my. So you got away with it, huh?
Yeah, at least until she listens to my show, because I think she may be our only listener at this point.
No, that's not true. Well, back to the riots. So, we kind of go back. We kind of have our little bunny trails. I think we're kind of known for our bunny trails. I think it all really, there's so much gray area here as far as what you can do. I think the biggest thing that anybody can do, no matter where you are, is to be proactive.
Well, going back also to where we left off with the firearms, just before the break, that was one thing that really stood out to me about the Ferguson riots and the riots in St. Louis, is that there was in the middle of the rioting area, there was a tattoo parlor where I saw a picture of about seven guys all armed with AR-15 standing in front of their tattoo parlor. And two blocks away, everything was burned. Two blocks the other way, everything was burned.
Oh, wow.
Right in front of their place, everything was safe.
Wow.
And it was a deterrence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the rioters are willing to take on the police because they know the police aren't going to shoot back.
Good point.
Because they have rules of engagement. But you see some big dude there with a rifle standing next to his shop, and the wave parts.
Right. Well, you've got to have a couple of big guys with rifles, because let me tell you, they've got to sleep sometime and go to the bathroom or eat, or,
well,
you know, you can't stay there, you know, 24/7.
This is the difference between a riot and a siege. I mean, if they're after your place,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've got a farm and you're growing, you've got livestock and a farm and you're a high priority target and they're coming for you,
that's
a different instance than here comes 1,000 people running, burning the city, going through.
Right, right, true.
They'll pass like locusts and keep moving and leave your place standing because you stood in the gap.
Yep, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point.
So, I mean, it's a touchy subject because a lot of people don't like guns. A lot of people are afraid of seeing people open carry or have guns on them. But guns are an important thing to even the playing field and make sure that you can defend yourself against either a large group of people or someone who is superior in strength or physical ability. And this is, you know, very poignant. Today was the last day of the GeorgiaCarry.org convention. I hope that some of our listeners made it to that. I mean, it's a great time. I know Troop Prep was there and everyone enjoyed it. I was there this morning. I gave a small lecture on situational awareness, and it went over fairly well. I enjoyed doing that and being invited to be there. It was quite an honor. Our guest from a few weeks ago, Jerry Henry, had extended an offer for me to go speak as a lecturer there. Fantastic event, getting people more aware and more comfortable with the idea of carrying firearms. And these are things that you can do. You know, harden your home, protect your property, be able to leave. You know, there are some times when discretion is a better part of valor, and you should just get out of Dodge if you're safe to do so. But if you can't, then these are steps that you can take to make yourself better prepared and be much safer in the event of something horrible like the riots that we saw.
Yeah, exactly. Well, also be prepared for everybody to be trying to get out of Dodge. And, you know, I, for one, was stuck in the big snowstorm.
Snowpocalypse.
Oh, my gosh, it was terrible. So, yes, I was stuck in that. And I've seen where everybody's just going to, you know, get ready and head out of Dodge. You ain't going nowhere.
Yeah,
in most cases. And, you know, so that's something to consider also. It's always important to have not only your plan A, but you need your plan B and plan C and maybe even plan D.
Exactly.
And you need to communicate these with your family members because there's nothing like, you know, something happening. And if you know that something's happening in a certain area where your loved ones are and you cannot reach them, I mean, that's scary stuff. So, I mean, if you have your everything is laid out, but you have to, you know, you have to take time to sit around the table and talk about these kind of things. I mean, I know it's not pleasant.
Well, you know, most Americans don't sit around the table at all.
I know it.
Sit around to talk about where do you go if there's a fire in the house, much less where do you go if the city's burning down.
Right, yeah. And, you know, that's something, too, Doug, you mentioned, you know, about the fires. And if you do secure your house, you said earlier something about if you secure your house, sometimes it's more difficult to actually get out.
And that's something that a lot of people do is they put in, you go downtown, you go to the worst parts of downtown, you see bars over all the windows and bars over the doors, and they've turned their house into a fortress to keep people from getting in.
Right.
But then the riot comes and they throw a couple of Molotov cocktails on your roof and you're trapped inside your house. You can't get out and it's burning down around you. Or you've hardened it so they can't possibly get in, but they're coming for you. Again, they can burn you out. And that's something that, you know, how do you defend against that? There's no good way if you've got an armed party that's coming after your house and with a plan, with a purpose to keep them from being able to burn you out. At that point, you just have to be able to be mobile.
Exactly. And you don't want to keep all of your eggs in one basket either. So if you have like you know, maybe a year's worth of freeze-dried food. I mean, if you have it all at that one location and you do get burned out of your home and you're on the run and you're heading out, then all of a sudden you're left with absolutely nothing.
Yeah, tell me about having everything in one basket and watching it burn down.
When
I moved back from Alaska, we had all of our life's possessions in one truck, and the truck caught fire and burned everything to a crisp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the kids' toys, all of our clothes, all of
my
property.
Yeah, you said like all your son's Legos were like one big, like
melted
colorful,
goop.
Melted,
yeah.
plastic thing, blob.
Yeah, with black streaks and soot, and it smelled to high heaven.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness, Amy, it stank. I mean, there are a few things that are, I think, are as traumatic as watching your stuff burn. It has just gone into nothing. That's an experience that I really would wish on no person, no matter how horrible a person they've been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you have friends and family, or, I mean, you don't have to have the, you know, the bunker that's out in the middle of nowhere.
You could if you wanted to.
Of course you could. There are people that actually have it. But not everybody. I mean, if we put everybody, you know, in the mountains, and all of a sudden everybody's there.
And you're back in Atlanta.
Exactly.
And wouldn't that be an interesting experience? Right? You're out in the middle of nowhere walking around like, hey, there's my neighbors, and there's the people from church, and I know that one from Kroger.
Right.
They're all here. The gang's all here. Let's just have our new riot in the mountains.
Right.
Folks, you've been listening to Ready Radio. We're going to change our name to Mountain Riot next week.
Yeah, and I think so.
In the meantime, I hope that you all have a good week. Stay tuned. You can check us out on www.readyradio.net. Catch old shows there. And continue to listen to News Talk 1160, the talk of the town, for all of your news this week. It's been a pleasure. Have a good weekend.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.